Hi, and welcome to the Friends Church Podcast. It's Jeff here, and I'm excited that you're willing to carve out some time to listen to one of our Sunday messages. You were part of a growing community of online listeners who are downloading our messages to support their spiritual journeys, to find ways to make a positive impact in their world, which is really exciting because that's exactly why we're providing this podcast. If you're finding value in what we're doing, I would like to ask you to join others within our tribe who financially support the work of Friends Church. Some view their support in a similar way that they see their monthly fitness club or boot camp dues, where they're paying 50 to 200 bucks a month. Others see it similar to their Apple Music or SoundCloud subscription, where they're paying 10 to 15 bucks a month. Amounts are personal to everyone, but every dollar donated will go into products like this. If you're willing, you can donate easily by visiting www.friendschurch.ca and clicking the red donate button. This will lead you to the Canada Helps portal that is used by many nonprofit organizations to process credit card payments. Just enter your information, including your donation amount, and click the General Fund tab. On behalf of Friends Church Tribe, welcome. We're glad you found us, and thank you. Now enjoy this week's message. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jeff, and I was away last week. You know, 1 week out of the spiritual gym, for me, I feel it. I was looking forward to coming back in this morning. If you're new here, we call this a spiritual gym. This isn't just a place to come and kind of sit and listen to music, and we really hope that we will provide an environment, that this can be an environment where you can wrestle. You can work out in your own life what your spirituality means to you, how you connect with God, how you take what you believe spirituality is in your life and roll it out into your everyday lives. Because ultimately, if what we do here doesn't translate into a better version of us tomorrow, Monday morning, in whatever area of work or school, whatever you do, this becomes a little bit meaningless. So I hope this morning you're strapped up, you're ready to think, you're ready to process, you're ready to kind of think application-wise to what this thing could do in your own life. One thing I wanted to bring up, we're right in the middle of Love Month, and each week we've been kind of challenging our community to consider ways that you can up the game in your relational world. And it starts off kind of nice. We get to pick someone, week one, pick someone who we just love dearly, and we just want to take that relationship from an 8 to a 9 and a half to a 10 for many of you. I know you have many of those. We are on the closing stretch, and here is when we want to give you an assignment that's a little tougher. We would guess that if you're like us, there's likely one person in your life, minimum, who maybe you've grown apart from. And not necessarily just natural life, but because of something that's gone down. Maybe it was a family discussion that went sideways at one point. Maybe there was someone who was judgmental and it led to a big confrontation. Maybe there was some help offered or something borrowed and the promise of repayment was never fulfilled. I can think of 100 different reasons why we end up in a place with someone in our lives who it's tough now to even look them in the eye. It's awkward when you walk into the same room. It's difficult when someone starts talking about this person and you have to choose your words carefully. It makes family dinners awkward. The growing silence, the distance becomes more and more, and now just the awkwardness around that person, because you both know there's something there. The assignment this week is to find that person in your life who maybe falls into this category of a troubled relationship, and to consider, I'm going to challenge you to consider something that you could do to take a step closer. In the city, it's different than in the country. In the country, when things go wrong, it's a lot harder to just say, you know what? I'm just going to go out and find some more friends. In rural areas, man, there's limited friends. Disposable relationships aren't necessarily a thing like they are in the city. You just say, I'm just going to move on. But this week, to end Love Month, we want to challenge you to reclaim a friendship, a relationship, something that has now grown cold, and to just make a little step. Someone did this for me about a year, just a little over a year ago. And I'll be honest with you, I had written it off. I said, I don't need someone like that in my life. If that's what they do, I don't need it. I got lots of other people to focus on. And that person reached out to me not all that long ago. It was an email. And it was guarded. But what it did inside of me, I don't know what that person was hoping it would achieve. All it said was, you matter. I'm sorry things didn't go. Things turned out the way they did. But I'd hope maybe one day we could get around this. You know what's funny? How it changed me toward that person. And already, we're still a long way apart, but we're moving closer. In my mind, I think that's spirituality. It says, man, I'm never going to write off people. I'm going to make a way. I'm going to open, keep my arms open. Might be a little guarded, but I'm going to keep them open. Would you consider someone in your life around you that you might be able to reach out to in this next week? Let's do that. Love Month. We're going to finish strong. I heard such huge feedback from last week's message. Vince gets come up again this week, hit it out of the park. He's talking about Judas. I think you're going to enjoy this.
Okay, so me and Jeff did not plan his stuff before my stuff, and now my whole beginning of my message isn't going to work. So I was going to make it up as we go. Let's just assume, actually, no. This is how I used to do it in school. You know, you've written a paper and you're just burned out and you got another paper to write. I go have a shower and pretend it's nighttime. And, you know, when I get out of the shower, it's morning and the whole day started over again. So I want you all to imagine that you're, like, just falling asleep, waking up, new day. You forgot what Jeff talked about. Except you're going to do it because it's really important. So I want you to think of the most manipulative person you can in your life. See how that did not work at all? No, but we all have them, right? There's people in our lives who try and control us or manipulate us. And the most, you know, the straight up ones are easy. What about the, and so don't put up your hand and please don't kick the person next to you if this is what's going on in them. But anybody in your life who is the high drama person, their life is just nonstop drama, right? You could have gone through major surgery and their ingrown toenail, they're texting you about how horrible this is and how you need to run over and help them, right? Because the world's falling apart and everything's going to hell in a handbasket and they really need some help. It's not manipulative at all, is it? My favorite ones, the people who manipulate, are the nicest people. They give and give and give. But after a time you realize, this is more like a string-attached gift. Well, they do something. They're often really good at reading you, and they know exactly what you need. But later on, all of a sudden, there's the ask, or there's the, well, why didn't you, or the... It's manipulative, isn't it? Or the people who say, no, 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 everything's okay, I'm fine, everything's okay. And you're like, no, clearly it's not okay. No, 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 it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. They're not letting you just go, hey, look, when you completely forgot my birthday, that really hurt, and so you can fix it. No. When I don't admit, I can feel upset about it longer. I can hold you responsible for that longer. Are the perfectionist people? They're the people who go, if I do everything right in this world, then I get what I deserve, and you got to give me what I'm supposed to get. And so everything in their life is all about being perfect and getting it right. And they're looking at you going, yes, but I did it perfect, so why aren't you? It's just another manipulation tactic. And we don't even, if you look at them, you're looking in their eyes and you're going, I bet you don't even realize what you're doing. God rest my mother, loved her to death, but she was the person who talked about safety. My life is a little less safe than hers was. Her idea of safety was shopping at Sobeys as opposed to Safeway. So she was always trying to say, but Vince, okay, but did you bring a snack? Okay, but why are you going out into the backcountry, Vincent? You know, and really it wasn't her trying to keep me safe. It was that my life was so distressing to her that she was trying to reduce her anxiety by just keeping me to stop doing things. It's manipulative, isn't it? You're freaking me out. Stop doing that. So don't do this. Watch out for this. Oh, did you read the article about that? Ooh, here's a forward. You got to check this out. That's probably going to happen. We see this all the time, don't we? And these people in our lives, even though I don't know that they understand that they're doing this, it kind of gets annoying, doesn't it? You see their usual way of coming at you and you're going, oh. Even if because of the relationship, you're just going to bow into it, you're still not happy about it. Okay, Mom. I won't tell you that I'm doing something unsafe. That'll be our compromise. I just won't talk about it. I'll tell you when I get home and I'm safe. But we start getting this resenting feeling, don't we? It's a sense of, I don't like that you are trying to control me or to manipulate me. I don't like the way you're doing this. This doesn't feel good between us. It starts to get really uncomfortable. And now we're at Friend Church, at Spiritual Gym, so you think that what I'm going to do is say, love God, love your neighbor. So how do you love your manipulative, controlling neighbor? And I think there's something there. I think that's important. But today I want to go a completely different direction altogether. And I want to do it because I think the Easter story has something really important to say about controlling and manipulative people. So let me do this. This time you can say something, not, hey, I have this manipulative person in my life. How many of you know the story of Judas? Anyone know the story of Judas? What do you know about the story of Judas? Just yell it out. Betrayal, right? Anything else? Anything else about the guy? Because you all spend every week like I do studying the Bible, of course. I'm just going to tell you something you'll probably all know already. So the story goes like this. There's a guy named Judas. What's his last name? Anyone remember his last name? Iscariot. That's going to become important in this story. So Judas Iscariot, we find him in this kind of the story where there's a group of Jewish people who want the other Jew, Jesus, killed. They want him dead. There's a whole reason for it. We'll talk about it in a second. Judas finds out about it, and he approaches him and says, wait a second. If I point him out, you could take care of the rest, right? They say, of course. He says, what do you give me for betraying Jesus? Anyone remember what they give him? 30 pieces of silver. So here we go. We have these 30 pieces of silver. He says, I'm going to betray him. Fast forward. Kind of going to jump past the Last Supper and the garden narrative in the Jesus life. Jesus is now just coming out of the garden, and who's there? Judas and a bunch of thugs. It says that they're armed with like clubs. Think baseball bats. And Judas walks up to Jesus, and what does he do to say, this is Jesus? Anyone remember that one? Gives him a kiss, right? Now, I know it's culture, and I know I'm not supposed to turn my culture back into their culture, but that just feels mean, doesn't it? With a kiss, really? That feels intimate. Now, I understand in their culture, not in our culture. But so now I want you to fast forward another. It's about between 2 and 3 hours, depending on how you time the whole thing. Jesus has gone through a bunch of different trials. He's now going to go in front of a guy named Pilate. Pilate runs the Roman government. The Romans basically own the Jewish country. They've taken it over. They're running the show. They can do whatever they want. They want you killed, you're dead. They want you to live, you're fine. You're dead, you're killed. No, they don't have to answer to anybody. There's no courts. He can do whatever he wants. And so Judas sees Jesus going away to Pilate. And something happens inside of Judas. It's like, no, this isn't, no. So he goes back to the guys at the beginning. He says, look, if I give you these 30 pieces of silver back, you can fix this, right? You can stop this. And they basically say, screw you, buddy. We're getting what we want. And so the last we hear of Judas, his Judas goes out into a field, ties a rope to a tree branch, and hangs himself. It's kind of a really brutal story, isn't it? When you look at the Easter story through the lens of Judas, this is just brutal. But the interesting thing is, I want to ask, and I want to be clear about something. The Bible never talks about why Judas did what he did. There's a couple little hints that we've taken, and we kind of extrapolated them. But the Bible isn't clear on why he does what he does. Everything we're going to talk about now is a bit of conjecture. But the Judas story never really made a ton of sense to me. Sure, Judas the betrayer, that's fine. He seeks out these groups of people that want Jesus killed. That makes sense of a betrayer, right? He kisses him in the garden. That makes sense. But why the change of heart? You ever thought about that? Judas actually sought out the group. It wasn't even like someone came to him and said, hey, look, you know, I'm going to hold you hostage or I'm going to blackmail you into doing this. No, he actually sought them out and said, wait a second. If I turn Jesus over to you, what are you going to give me? And only a couple hours later, a couple days later, he's so distraught over what he's done that he kills himself. It just doesn't fit properly. It's kind of like when Judas should be feeling something, like, hey, I'm going to turn my best friend, the guy who I think is the most important person in my life, my teacher, over to be killed. You think he should be feeling a little bit distraught? Instead, what he does is he actually looks for the opportunity to make this happen. So it's almost like you watch a movie and you know the characters, you're following the characters through and you're going, why are they doing that? Today, that's what I want to talk about. Because Judas's story, I think, has a lot to say about how we interact with the controlling people in our lives. In order to do that, I want to talk about why. So people have often said, there's a number of theories of why Judas betrayed Jesus. One, greed. Well, how many pieces of silver did he get? 30 pieces of silver. That's probably like $6 million in our day, right? It's actually maybe a couple thousand dollars. It's equivalent of a blue-collar wage for a month. Greed doesn't make a ton of sense then, does it? So people say, no, Judas was evil. That's what it is. He was evil. And it makes sense because he sought out the opportunity to betray Jesus. This was his own free will. Makes sense of evil yet. But why at the end, as soon as he sees Jesus is going to die, does he go, whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on here? So the question is, why did Judas do what he did? Now, the last piece of information you guys knew was interesting. Oh, I got to tell you a couple different reasons history has talked about. One of them, there's this whole like backstory where Judas was actually in league with Pilate, and they had this whole like clandestine thing that they were doing. It was this whole involved story. That was maybe 1200s. Don't quote me on the exact date, but let's say 1200, give or minus about 1,000 years. Somewhere in there, that became popular. My personal favorite slash most horrible one that I think, I like it because it'll speak to Jeff's message next week. The story reads that Judas had a wife, and his wife made him do it. Talk about anti-women bias in Christian culture. Yikes. Jeff's going to talk about that next week. It's going to be a great message. You're all like, good luck, Jeff. It's going to be good. My favorite story, though, is this one. This is the one that I want to talk about today. His last name was what? Iscariot. Weird name, huh? Does anybody know Peter's last name or John's last name or anyone else's last name? But for some reason, the Bible talks about his last name. Now, Iscariot, the name, is actually really close to an Aramaic word called skari. And askari is the name of a knife. A short knife, probably about this long, curved. You can hide it in your clothes really easy. So the question, or the theory then becomes this. What would, or could it be possible that Judas Iscariot, the Iscariot actually speaks to something about his group of people that he hangs out with? Okay, so at this point, if you want to completely deny or ignore everything I say, that's the most tenuous piece of data I got. So if you're saying, Vince, I'm not buying it, just say, yeah, his name's not that. They just want to tell his last name for other reasons. But if you take his name to be meaningful, and it is actually connected to that word for askari, something really interesting happens. Really interesting. Okay, Jeff talked about this, but I'm going to give you a bit of overview. Romans occupy the Jewish lands. For about 200 years from Epiphanes all the way through, there's been multiple attempts at genocide of the Jewish people. Now, basically, their land has been taken over by the Romans. They can do whatever they want. Same thing. Kill you, rape you, throw you in jail, take your lands, no big deal. The Romans can do whatever they want. So the Jewish people are looking at the end of their society. They've lost their land. They don't own it anymore. All they have left is their society, being Jewish. So what would you do if that happened to you? It's a tough one, isn't it? And in the Jews, four different main groups kind of came out of the woodwork. The first one was called the Sadducees. These are the people we think are the people at the beginning of the Judas story who want Jesus dead. Not just because they're evil people. Not just because they're bad people. They're not just foils. Here's the Sadducees' response to the Roman occupation was this. Don't make them angry. Keep the peace. This group of people did whatever the Romans wanted, anytime they wanted it. All they focused on was keeping the peace so that the Romans wouldn't obliterate them and the Romans would let them do their worship in their way at the temple in Jerusalem. So along comes this upstart Jewish Messiah, or sorry, not Messiah, Rabbi, Jesus. He's causing all sorts of problems, you know, unrest, people getting freaked out, upset. What are the Sadducees? Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's impacting the peace of this world. We got to do something about this. And so the Sadducees were the primary group that we think wanted Jesus dead. Now, just to blow your mind, if you're open to this, Jesus isn't the only Messiah that we read about in this era. There's many of them. We might call him the penultimate Messiah, but Messiah was a common thing. And the Sadducees were pretty skilled and had done this quite a bit. They knew how to take care of Messiahs, people who were stirring up the peace. That's the first group. Second group. Second group were the Essenes. They basically said, we're out of here. So they went and they built like some huts in the middle of nowhere and they just hung out. They like, maybe if we are really quiet, they'll forget we're here. Anyone heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls? That comes from the Essene group. So they're in their little place writing stuff down. They hid them in little jars, and that's what we found. So that's the group. So the Essenes, basically, you don't read about them in the Bible because they're gone. They don't want to do anything. Then we have the Pharisees. We hear a lot about the Pharisees. The Pharisees basically just said, look, as long as we teach all the Jews Torah, it's going to work out. Torah meaning the law, the Jewish law. It's going to work out. So you see a lot about them in the New Testament, right? They're always saying, okay, do this, don't do this. They said, if we keep things really, do exactly what we're supposed to do, everything's going to be okay. So Sadducees, Essenes, Pharisees, last group, the Zealots. The Zealots. The Zealots wanted nothing to do with the Romans. And the most radical group of the Zealots was called the Sicarii. Sound familiar? They carried little knives that were curved. And this is how they would do it. They were sick of the Romans. So we're all hanging around in a square, you know, doing what you do in a market in the ancient Near East. I don't know what you did. Barter for fabric or something. So we're all in there, and there's Romans, and there's Jews, and there's Gentiles. There's people from all over the world. And all of a sudden, a Roman would fall. And everyone would start screaming and running away. And you realize there's a Roman down there and their kidney's cut. Or their throat's been cut. No one knows what's going on. That was the Sicarii. They were the biblical ninjas. They actually predated the ninjas. There's actually some research in saying that these were the first ninja group. If you remember anything about this message, remember biblical ninjas. So what would happen if Judas was one of the Sicarii? Judas Iscariot starts to make sense, right? If he's one of the zealot groups, what does he want? He wants complete overthrow of the Roman group. And he's not okay, or he's not against using force, terrorism, violence, you name it. Not a problem. Interesting, isn't it? So now here's this guy named Judas. And he's met somebody that he thinks is the Messiah. Now, again, Messiah actually means Savior. So when you hear Jesus Christ, Christ is the Greek way of saying Messiah, which means Savior. This is somebody that God's going to use to save the world. And if you're a zealot, how do you think God's going to save the world? He's going to take it over, right? Romans out, Jews in, Bob's your uncle. Everything's going to be great. I'm going to come back to the Judas story in just a second. But before, I need to get you guys to feel something. I want to tell you a little story about my niece. This is Raider. Can you throw up the picture for me? Now imagine my little niece. Isn't she cute? Now, you have to understand that she is a fashionista at the highest level. So we are out. We're out on the top of a sledding hill with Raider. She has matching ski pants with her hairband. God forbid she wears a toque because that would mess up her hair. And then all hell would break loose. So here's precocious little Maraid, and you're behind her. And she looks back at you with these little eyes saying, could you please push me harder? I'm not having any fun. I can't go fast enough on this hill. So what do? You throw all caution to the wind. You pull her back another 2 feet to get a little bit more of a run at it. And then you just give it everything you got, right? Just boom. And you see her. She's like a rocket. She's like, ah! You're like, yeah! Until the toboggan starts to go a little sideways. You're like, ah! And then it hits a tree and you're like, oh, geez. God, that was not supposed to happen. You know that feeling? It's just like, oh. That, I had the best intentions and just... Now remember that cringe feeling you have. And let me tell you the Judas story through a new lens. So imagine Judas is a zealot. An extreme zealot. He wants nothing more than to have the Romans overturned. He wants them all dead. And he meets this guy named Jesus. And in his soul, he knows this is the guy. This is the Messiah. He is going to do what we've been trying to do our whole lives. And it's incredible. You get to follow him. Day after day, you're watching him. You're seeing what he says. You're looking at him going, oh, we have fought for this for so long. You're already starting to live in the new reality of, we're going to be able to have our own, you know, worship. No one's going to be able to tell us what to do. We don't have to worry about our safety anymore. It's going to be incredible. You're playing out the whole rest of your life. You're sitting at Jesus' feet, listening to what he's saying. You're like, it's going to be so good. And then Jesus starts talking about things like sacrifice. You're like, you okay? That doesn't sound quite right. How does that? Like, how does sacrifice mean take over from the Romans and kill them all? Okay, you know, you're like, okay, no, this is the guy. This is the guy. He's having a bad day. Maybe I just didn't get what he was saying, right? And he starts talking more about this kind of stuff. And you're going, okay, Jesus, yeah. What are you talking about here? It gets worse and worse. Now, deep down inside, in your soul, you know that Jesus is the guy, and you know what needs to happen. You've lived this your whole life. So you think, maybe Jesus is just having a bad day. And that leads to, you know, it's a big thing overthrowing the Romans. You know, they're the biggest military power in the area that we know of. He's just a little scared, a little timid, right? We all have days where we're a little timid, right? Maybe he just needs a little push. And that's when he hatches his plan. It's a beautiful plan. Nothing could ever go wrong with this plan. This is going to work. Jesus is just a little timid. We just need to give him a little push over the edge, and he's going to rise up and take over the whole thing. It's going to be incredible. So he says, how can I get him into a situation where the only thing he can do is rise up to become the Messiah that we all know he's meant to be? And so when he hears a group of Sadducees say, this Jesus guy, man, he's a threat. He could cause the Romans to come down hard on us. When he hears that, he goes, now I know what to do. And so he seeks them out. And he asks for a paltry sum to say, look, I'll turn you over to Jesus. All along knowing that when Jesus gets to that moment, when he has the choice between going south and rising up and doing what he's meant to do, the choice is obvious. We know what he's going to do. Even in the garden, he's looking at going, it's going to be great. Goes and kisses him. No big deal. This is going to be good for you, Jesus. Until 3 hours later, he's looking at Jesus going, oh, crap. You know that cringe feeling? Times that by a million. He sees the push. He sees how it's going to play out. He sees Jesus with the authorities and goes, okay, here it is. And Jesus just goes, okay, I'll go to my death. Can't you just see Judas just like, what are you doing? He runs back to the people that he sold them out to. He throws back the money. He's like, no, make this stop. You have to make this stop. This can't go down like this. They say, screw you, buddy. We got what we want. Not only is one of your closest friends and your teacher, the person who is going to save your entire race, is about to be killed, and you did it. When the Sadducees look at him and say, buddy, you did this. It's true. He did. Does it make sense why he killed himself at the end? Again, everything we do when talking about why Jesus did what he did is conjecture. But when I read the story through that lens, things shift for me. Judas isn't so much a betrayer as a manipulator. See that? He wants something from Jesus. He wants so badly that he says, I'm going to push you in a situation where the only thing you can do is rise up. In his mind, I don't even think that he thinks this is a bad plan. He doesn't see anything wrong with it. Because he's used to manipulating the world around him. The Judas story moves from becoming a story about a betrayer, which is horrible, and it could very well be that, to a story of what happens when you try and manipulate the world around you. To me, it becomes a cautionary tale. So the people in your life right now who are trying to control you, this is the Judas story, isn't it? Instead of just saying to you, hey, you know, I need a little help here, or I'm feeling insecure, or I'm not sure what to do. Can you come help me out? Or no, they pull a Judas. They try and manipulate things so that you can't help but do what they want you to do without them actually asking for it. It's manipulation, isn't it? It doesn't work. When you read the Judas story through this lens, it's a tale that says, if you try and live this way, chances are it's going to go really badly for you. Because marriages have ended over this. Friendships destroyed. People just saying, I am done with that person. Families torn apart. Christmas is often the most stressful time, in large part because of this. The relational dynamics are so distorted. People aren't even willing to spend time with family anymore. So the reason I wanted to tell you this story and told you a lot today, you guys got to learn a lot, is not just because I want there to be a cautionary tale in the world for the people who try to manipulate you. I want to ask you this final question. Where in your life have you been manipulating the people around you? You think the people around you are the only ones manipulating? Have you ever thought about how you do it? That's a tough one, isn't it? Of course, I don't manipulate people. I'm a pastor. We don't do that. In the write-up for this message, you know the little blurb you saw emailed out? I wrote it up and I wrote it again. And I came over to April's office, our office manager. She runs everything for us. And she... I'm like, hey, April, can you read this? And she's in her computer and I'm like... You know how I started off? Think about that person in your life who tries to control the world. She's like, yeah, he's looking over my shoulder right now. Like, oh, crap. See, my personality tends to not be super subtle about the manipulation or the control. I just try and take it. But it's so natural to me, I didn't even see it. In a message where I'm supposed to be self-aware, I'm trying to teach you guys about this, I'm doing the very thing that I'm not supposed to be doing in that moment while I'm writing it up. Now, of course, none of you are like that. None of you use emotionality. None of you have ever held a grudge longer than you needed to instead of just saying, you know what, I'm going to let that go. No. You're the wounded party for a little while longer. Never done that, have you? No one's ever used perfectionism to try and earn their way into something. No one's tried to look good, present themselves well, look successful so that people react to them in a strong way. No one's ever given with strings attached. None of you have ever done that, have you? You see, I think chances are, if you're anything like me, we're all Judas. Not Judas the betrayer, Judas the manipulator. When you look at the Easter story through the lens of Judas, through this reading of Judas, it shifts something, doesn't it? It makes you ask yourself the question, wait a second. When do I do that? I thought long and hard about how I could get you guys to see this. Here's my best one. Ask someone you love. Just ask them this question. How do I try and manipulate you? And then keep your mouth shut. Because you're going to do everything you can to try and deny that what they said is true. You're going to try and manipulate the crap out of that situation so that you don't have to feel the pain that says, I am Judas. And I'm doing it right here and right now. At Friends Church, we say, we focus on loving God and loving your neighbor. Our languages, we say, find your unique spirituality and let that spirituality impact your life. At the beginning, I said, there's people in your life who are trying to control. You can love them in that kind way. But today, I actually want to flip it to the other side. That whole love God part, think of spirituality in this way. Look deep inside of yourself. Find that unhealthy thing inside of you that's trying to manipulate the people around you, trying to control the world, and open it up. For those of you who are theists, open up to God. Let God get in there and go, because I don't know, my conception of God is God just kind of gets in there into that, like, oh, there you go, Clausen, take that one. Not because it's mean, because that's the area I do not want to work on. So if you're a theist, if you think of the divine, the more than, open yourself up to something more, to say, wait a second, how can I be the healthiest I can possibly be? How can I let my spirituality heal something deep inside of me? And then let that beautiful, healthy place spill out into your world. Love your neighbor. In this case, I don't think it says put up with the person who tries to manipulate you. I think love your neighbor comes from a place of such deep healing and health that it spills out of you into the world around you. So if you're going to remember one thing about this message, what are you going to remember? Biblical ninja, right? That's a good one. But I want you guys to remember Judas, not the betrayer, but Judas the manipulator. And ask yourself, where in my life am I trying to control things? Where am I trying to manipulate things? Ask the people you love, man. They will tell you the answer to this one, whether you like it or not. So this is the Easter story according to Judas. Jeff's going to do the Easter story according to Mary Magdalene. I already talked a bit about it. It's going to be fantastic. It's the role of women in society from ancient Near East all the way through to present day. It's going to be incredible. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. Happy Family Day. Happy Families Day. That's what it was.